to before he first came to me, and he had felt his bereavement terribly. I think he had a great number of sittings with other mediums as well as myself, and he always appeared to have derived great comfort from his sittings in which his beloved wife always 71. Communicated with him. At the time I should have called him an absolute believer in survival and communication, but long afterwards I learned, through his friends, that he had been uncertain in his mind about the other side. He apparently believed that his wife existed somewhere, somehow, and that she could, and did, at times, communicate with him with more or less success. The evidence she had given had forced him to the conclusion that the entity purporting to be his must be she. But how she lived, or where, and in what manner he would meet her again, if he ever did meet her, were matters on which he never came to any very definite or satisfactory conclusion. Undoubtedly, the feeling that his wife had sent him any message at all had changed him from a broken-hearted man to one who found life bearable, to say the least of it, and he initiated many other people into the subject that had assisted him to overcome their sharpest pangs of sorrow. I should think his age was between 50 and 55, and he was very active, so no one thought of Colonel Halifax as likely to pass over himself at that time, but a rather curious incident occurred which I must tell you about. Colonel Halifax occasionally took notes for other sitters, and was in the habit of accompanying one particular gentleman to his sittings with me. One day I was expecting them, and had run up to my bedroom a few minutes before they were due, to get a handkerchief or something, and I looked out of the window, which faced onto the road, and saw my sitter, with Colonel Halifax, walking slightly behind him. The sitter opened my gate, and Colonel Halifax followed him in, and up the path. I went out of my bedroom and, leaning over the banisters, called out to my husband, who did not always hear the front door bell distinctly, "They are here, open the door," and went back into my room for a moment. When I went downstairs, my husband said, "The sitter is alone. Colonel Halifax has not come." "Why did you say they are here?" "Dot," I replied, "because I saw Colonel Halifax as distinctly as I see you now. He must have come right up to the door with the sitter, and then gone away again before you opened it." Then I went into the drawing room, and my sitter told me that Colonel Halifax had been unable to accompany him, as he had a previous engagement. I didn't like this at all. I didn't like it, because one very occasion when I thought I had seen a person, and then discovered that he or she had not been there at all, that same person had passed over soon afterwards. I cannot explain it. I only know it has happened several times, and not only to old people, but to young or middle-aged, and to those who were apparently in good health. As far as I knew at the time, usually the person has passed over a few days after, at their most a few weeks, but in one case it was quite a year, though the unexpected disease 72, which resulted in the untimely passing of this person, made itself manifest a short time after I had seen the double, or whatever it is. The fatal disease must have been there at the time I saw the double, though unsuspected by any of his friends. As I say, I cannot explain it, but I have a theory which is supported by many things that have been said by experienced spirit communicators, and it is, that when anyone is stricken with a malignant disease, or going into conditions of such danger that death is inevitable, their soul knows it, though the ordinary mind, or brain, does not. The soul senses its speedy deliverance from the physical. This may not be so in all cases, but from my experience, it is so in a great number. I think that the soul knows a great deal of what we call their future, tomorrow's shadow, somebody told me to call it, that is, perhaps wisely, hidden from the ordinary consciousness. But I must stop, because I am touching on matters of which I want to speak to you later on. At the moment I want to tell you about Colonel Halifax. Shortly after I had seen his double, he was taken ill. His trouble was diagnosed as appendicitis, and he was prepared for the usual operation, but apparently the surgeons found that the appendix did not need removing after all, and the cut was sewn up. Colonel Halifax was patched up, and seemed to be recovering, but a few days after the attempted operation, he collapsed and died from heart failure. He had been sitting up in bed talking quite cheerfully to friends when this happened. A few weeks after his passing, I was spending a weekend with friends near Harrow. On the Sunday afternoon, my hostess insisted on my going to my bedroom and lying down to rest. I prepared to doze. Instead, I began to feel very much awake, but felt there same sensation of leaving my body as I described before. Suddenly I found myself standing in a very pretty garden, stocked with every kind of flower. A little way to the left was a house. Looking around, I knew I had been permitted to visit the spirit world again. As I stood in the garden, I noticed that close to me on the right was a long wooden shed. I walked in. The place looked like a small engineering works. Suddenly a man stepped quickly out of the adjoining room, and to my joy I recognized Colonel Halifax. "Mrs. Leonard, I'm so glad you've come to see me," he said. "Now let me tell you something quickly, while there's time. It's all true. All I was told about the life here was true. Only it's so much better than I was told it would be." He said this with great emphasis, as if he longed to impress me with the sense of his happiness. He told me that his wife had met him immediately after his passing, and that his joy in the reunion was great and deep. Then he said, "There is someone here whom I wish you to meet, Mrs. Leonard, and please look at her well, so that you will remember her when you return to your physical body." He evidently was quite aware that I was only on a temporary visit to the spirit world, and that I should be leaving again almost immediately. 73. I turned, hoping to see his wife, but I saw at once that it could not be she, as during his Earth life Colonel Halifax had given me a description of her, and the woman he now beckoned forward had a very different personality. Indeed, she was so striking in coloring and figure that a description of her would not have fitted one woman in a thousand. A moment after, I felt myself being drawn away from the place and found myself in my physical body, lying on the bed in my friend's house. About a fortnight later, a sister of Colonel Halifax came to have a sitting with me. I had not met her before, but her brother had told her, during his life here, about me. After the sitting, I told her about my visit to her brother's spirit home. I omitted the description of the shed as it puzzled me, and seemed so unlike anything the Colonel would be interested in. But when I described there, to me, unknown lady, she said, that was one of the people he loved best in the world. She was the aunt who brought him up, took the place of a mother to him. He was devoted to her, right up to the time she died. I was pleased to hear this, and felt sure that Colonel Halifax's critical and clever mind had arranged for me to meet his aunt instead of his wife, as he knew that I had never heard of the existence of the former, and it would be so much more evidential for me. Arad would prove to me that I had really been to his spirit home and seen him. It was just like Colonel Halifax to think all this out, as he was always very keen on evidence. A few weeks later, the sister passed over, too, very suddenly, and it was good to feel that her last days were happier because she had heard of her brother. The engineering shed still stuck in my mind. I could not imagine what connection it had with Colonel Halifax. Several months afterwards I met a friend of the Colonel's, and while talking about him I felt impelled to ask if the Colonel had ever been interested in engineering. The friend replied, of course he had. He had been a very clever engineer, and was very fond of it too. I was pleased with this information, as it was something altogether outside my knowledge of him. 74. Chapter 22, Over the Wall and What IT Looks Like. How very much like the Earth this other world looks. At least, that portion of it that I have seen when visiting the different friends who have passed away. There appear to be houses, gardens, meadows, woods, lakes, but I have never seen what I would call a manufacturing town, a colliery town, or anything approximating to one, at least, not on the plane where I have seen these normal, everyday sort of people like Colonel Halifax and my other friends. That there are other conditions than this third sphere, as it is called, I am well aware. I have never been to the higher ones, or if I have, I have not remembered on returning to my physical condition again. We probably often visit the third sphere during sleep, but we forget it on awaking. Undoubtedly, just as there is the physical world, or condition, so is there the spiritual or etheric world, or condition. We have the physical body which is tangible and visible to other people's sight, and we also have our spiritual or etheric bodies which are invisible to the physical eye, but are clearly visible to the sight of other etheric bodies, whether those bodies are occupied by souls that have temporarily left their physical conditions, while on a visit to the spiritual world, or whether they have passed over and taken up what we can only call permanent residence over there. Of course, in this book, I am telling you of people, places, and things as I have seen them, and remembered. Other people may see differently, or perhaps it is that we remember them differently. On awaking, at the same time, we find, on comparing notes, that there are an astonishingly large number of people who see and remember the same sort of thing. While traveling in the etheric world, I have had abundant corroboration from others of many of the scenes I have witnessed in that way. So far I have told you about their happy places and people whom I have seen. Indeed, one is struck with the happiness that emanates from the people who have rejoined those they loved. One realizes, from all that our discarnate friends tell us, that there is much for them to do over there. It is not a place of idleness. It appears that all forms of beauty are reproduced there. Musicians still create beautiful sounds, the singer sings, the artist paints, and undoubtedly the enthusiastic gardener gets a good innings there, and we have been told that those who have a gift for designing and building pleasant homes do so now, for the benefit of those who pass over and have not developed the ability, or taste, for making their own. There are no square pegs in round holes on that plane. The man or woman who has been squeezed into an uncongenial job on Earth, but who was conscious of his or her ability to do something else far better, but did not get there. Chance finds that he or she is provided with the work that suits them when they pass over, that is, if they are ready for it. People who have known nothing about the future. 75. State, and haven't wanted or tried to know, often find themselves at a disadvantage on reaching the new world, and are helped by the relatives or friends already the two. Perform some quite simple tasks to which they have been accustomed, even if they have not previously felt such work to have been their métier, until such time as they are acclimatized, as many of our communicators have called it. The watchword there is service, and their one ambition is not only to progress themselves, but also to help those who are still on earth to progress, too, and above all, to endeavor to teach them something about life as a whole, not just the physical portion of it with which so many of us are contented, but all sides of it, especially their spiritual and mental powers and possibilities in man, so that he may be better equipped for the higher life when he is ready for it. Indeed, if we could only take their teaching literally, and apply it to our daily lives on earth, as far as is humanly possible, should we not be able to live that higher life before leaving our earth bodies? Is it not intended that we should do so instead of waiting in ignorance and apathy, as so many do? What are their teachings? Well, there are so many, many books, volumes of them, that I do not need to give you a list. Two of the most recent that come to my mind are Your Infinite Possibilities and Your Latent Powers, by Margaret V. Underhill. 76. Chapter 23, An Awkward Question is Asked, and Answered. Once I attended a direct voice seance at the house of a friend. During the seance, many spirit communicators spoke to their friends on this side, and in reply to the usual question, "Are you happy?" they replied that they were. Indeed, several did not wait to be asked but volunteered the information, each one saying, "I am so happy," etc., in different words. Immediately after the seance, a sitter to whom it was evidently a new experience, exclaimed, "Look here, all these spirits say they are happy. Every one of them said so, without exception. Well, why are they happy? What right have they got to be so happy?" Somebody replied, "Well, I suppose because they happen to be decent sort of people when they were on earth." "Yes," said the newcomer, "but we aren't all saints, nor even decent. Where are their ratters? Don't they ever speak? And if they do, do they all chant, 'I'm so happy'?" No one seemed able to answer him satisfactorily. I hardly knew him and felt rather diffident about entering into what would have perforce been a wordy description of my own experiences in the matter, but I am sure it is a question that many people must have asked. Where are the rotters, the thoroughgoing rotters, the partial rotters, and the lovable rotters, who are only rotten because they haven't got a spiritual philosophy that is strong enough to support them in their temptations and struggles of life on earth? It has been my sad and painful experience to visit, during sleep, some of the lower planes, especially where the poor mistaken souls go who have committed suicide. I am not referring now to the man who is temporarily off his head through illness or mental anxiety, but of the man who deliberately ignores the pain and suffering he is going to inflict on all those who are connected with him, and refusing to shoulder his responsibilities any longer, throws them off, as he thinks, gets rid of them, by ending his physical life by his own hand, only to discover that he hasn't got rid of anything, nor ended his life, but has only precipitated himself into another condition of existence. Oh, the difference between the sphere to which such a one goes, and the happy planes which I have described to you. These lower planes are darker. The very air seems grey. One visit to such a place remains in my mind above all others. I realized that I had left my earth body, and after experiencing that upward motion which I have mentioned before, I found myself floating over a curious, desolate, rocky country. Dark, gloomy. 77. Rocks, forming caverns and crevices, pools of dark water, and an overwhelming feeling of loneliness are what I remember most strongly about this sinister plain. At first I viewed it with a certain amount of detached interest, as I half realized that I had been brought, or sent to the place, as an experience, but on looking more closely through the murky atmosphere, I saw many human forms moving about, slowly dejectedly, and others sitting or standing on the rocks and large stones that abounded there. What astonished me was that the people all stood or sat singly. They appeared either to be unconscious of each other's presence, or to be uninterested there. Atmosphere of depression and hopelessness was expressed by the very cut of their scenery, the air of its miserable-looking inhabitants. I found myself drawing nearer to one particular man. I could see him distinctly, as I was so close to him. His look of abject hopelessness was terrible, and changed occasionally to a kind of puzzled wonder as to what he was doing over there. I felt overcome with pity for him. My feeling was so intense, he seemed to feel it, or sense it. Something that looked, or did I only imagine it, like a faint ray of hope illuminated his face. I wanted to speak to him, but immediately found myself being drawn back to my physical body again. I awoke, remembering clearly every detail of the place, there, people, and of this particular man's appearance. I felt impressed to pray for him, and did so. 2 days later, Sir Walter Gibbons called to see me, looking very tired and exhausted. I asked him what was the matter. He replied, "I have had an awful time on the astral plane during sleep. The night before last I was taken to the plane where some suicides go, and there I saw my old friend, who killed himself the previous day, because he had got so terribly into debt and financial trouble." "Wait a moment," I said, "I think I have been there, too. Wait till I describe some of it to you." I did so, and alternately Sir Walter and I described details of the place to each other, until we were certain we had actually been to the same plane, and seen the same man. At the same time, though I did not remember seeing Sir Walter, and he did not recollect seeing me. Anyhow, we both prayed for, and thought of, his friend, who, we heard later, made good and gradually progressed to a higher and happier condition. This was not the only plane of which Sir Walter and I brought back complete and detailed memories. Sometimes, on awakening from such an experience, Sir Walter would look at his watch and write down the exact time. I did not do that, because in my bedroom I can hear the grandfather's clock chime in the hall below, and usually get a good idea of the time from that. Several times I noticed that I must have come back about 5 minutes to six, as the clock chimed six almost immediately after I awoke. Later, on comparing these notes, 78. Sir Walter and I always agreed regarding the time of our return to our earth bodies. There are so many planes, some below that where we saw the suicides, and some between that one and the happy plane which some people call the Summerland. Our spirit communicators often tell us that those who have hurt others, deliberately and callously, go to the lower planes. Those who have hurt themselves more than others are still bound to a somewhat low condition in the spirit world, especially if they have made themselves slaves to the desires of the physical life, the fleshly body. An isolated sin or occasional lapse has a very different effect on the soul body, compared to the constant and habitual living in the thraldom of the flesh, and their consequent elimination of every spiritual instinct. The power, then, that a man will have, the position he will occupy, the place where he will live, all depend upon what he has made of his soul body while on earth. He cannot, will or choose where he shall live in the spirit world. He goes to the place that he has fitted himself for during his life in the physical body. There are many people who might be classed as sinners or rotters by the uncorrupted folk, people who have thoughtlessly drifted into undesirable conditions, succumbed to temptations without ever realizing the significance of what they are doing. Yet in so many other ways they may be the kindest and most lovable people it is possible to meet. So few of us are all black, or all white. If we have balanced our mistakes by good deeds and kind actions, we shall find ourselves on a plane that is quite a pleasant one, in our earthly sense of the word. But we shall not have full power and freedom in the spiritual life because our soul bodies are not prepared and fitted for it. The descriptions given me of the places lying between the suicide's plane and their summerland sound very much like the conditions of earth, not earth at its best, nor its worst, but a kind of intermediate state containing neither the beauties of the one nor their ugliness of the other. One thing I am sure of is that it is not so easy for those who occupy a comparatively low position in the spiritual world to communicate in the ordinary conditions of the seance room. Many rescue circles are held where mediums and sitters are specially developed so as to help and advise the unhappy spirits that are brought to them by guides whose mission it is to do this work. I have often sat in a direct voice circle and have been deeply impressed by the facility and ease with which the intelligent and evolved spirits speak, compared to the halting and labored communication of one who has passed over after causing great suffering. 79. To others because of his degrading and selfish life on earth. The plane that Sir Walter and I disliked visiting even more than the one where we saw the suicides, was a place to which we went several times before we discovered what it was, and why it existed. I have hesitated a great deal as to whether I should describe this particular sphere or not. Yet I feel it cowardly to shirk truth because it is unpleasant, and it seems a very poor policy always to present one side of a picture, and purposely to ignore the other, when one knows it exists. Let us dwell on the happy, hopeful aspects of life as much as we will, but we must not imagine there are no evils to be cleared away, while we pretend there are none, or purposely avoid discussing, or trying to tackle them, we help them to accumulate, just as one would by ignoring the presence of dirt or dust in a room, because one didn't want to raise trouble by making an onslaught on it. While I was, wrongly, I know, considering the advisability of omitting this chapter, I put out my hand, without thinking, and reached for a book that stood on a table nearby. I opened it idly and at random, and staring me in the face were these words. They are slaves who fear to speak for the fallen and the weak. They are slaves who will not choose hatred, scoffing, and abuse, rather than in silence shrink from the truths they needs must think. They are slaves who dare not be in the right with two or three. J. R. Lowell. This made me ashamed of my hesitation, so I must just tell you briefly what we saw in those lower regions. I must give my own idea of them, but Sir Walter has seen their same, or some of the places, too. On my first few visits I was so puzzled as to the nature of the places, that I only brought back a feeling of abhorrence, and a vague memory of animals being there. I quietly thought it over during the day, and sent out a mental request that my guides, or whoever was sending me to these places during sleep, would give me some enlightenment as to the purpose of their existence. Otherwise it seemed a waste of time, if I was just going there to have my feelings harrowed by something I did not in their least understand. For some time after I did not see these places, and thought my visits must have been brought to an end by my instinctive dislike of them, and I felt that I must make a conscious effort to control such a feeling in which there might be lurking an element of fear, which often inhibits genuine out-of-the-body traveling and experiences. I must mention here that I have noticed that the real astral, or etheric, experiences are stopped by reluctance or fear, but that ordinary dreams or nightmares, the kind that are 80, caused by indigestion or some other physical disturbance that affects the brain, are not stopped. In fact, the more one fears, the more one is harassed by them.